The Playlist with Ben and Fiona.
And the Emmy goes to...
Hi, and welcome to The Playlist, where we talk about movies and TV shows that are worth your time. I'm Ben Nguyen, and I'm the channel manager for SBS TV. And this week, I'm joined as my co-host by the SBS Viceland channel manager, John Bohm. Hi, John.
Hey, Ben. Great to join you over Zoom, as always. Sorry that Fee can't be here, but I'll try to fill in her lovely shoes.
Well, I think she's off having holiday hijinks for her birthday, so we wish her all the very best. But yes, that has left me with you as her replacement.
Yeah, I am many people's replacements and nobody's first choice.
But it is exciting because in what has become a playlist tradition, today we are doing a recap of the 2020 Emmys.
Well, hello and welcome to the pandemies.
Who won, who didn't, what got us excited. I'm looking forward to this, John.
What shows we haven't watched and will now have to watch as a result.
That's the subtitle of the episode.
Yeah. This whole Emmys is just a year's worth of shows for me to now watch. It's giving me plenty of homework.
Well, I mean, that's funny you say that, because is that not the function of an awards show, to get the general population excited about TV shows that they probably haven't seen? And that brings me to my first question for you, John. In this day and age, what is the point of an awards show? Why are we talking about the Emmys?
I don't know anymore. I've already seen headlines from John Oliver saying, like, why did we do this? Like, you know, he won an award, but he's already questioning why it even existed. And I did just see a Variety review of the Emmys, and the headline was, "Subdued Emmy winners reflect weariness of our times." And I kind of feel like...
Oh, good.
That sums things up.
Yes. Well, it was a very strange Emmys, and I think the fact that we're speaking to each other remotely via Zoom is very apt given the format of the show, and we will get to that later. But inevitably, I think we'll see the headlines tomorrow that ratings were the lowest they've ever been, because for all big awards shows, that seems to be the trend now, as viewers depart the linear experience. I mean,
yeah.
Does that not beg the broader question, what point do our jobs still have, John, you and I as linear channel managers?
Look, let's not think about it too much, Ben. Let's just live in the moment. Be happy we still have jobs. And just on the ratings, last year's was the lowest ever, with Fleabag's big sweep, and inevitably today's will be the new lowest with Schitt's Creek sweep. So another big win for shows not a lot of people watch.
John, we haven't gotten to the winners.
Okay,
yet.
Sorry. Spoiler.
Don't spoil this yet. Okay. Because I want to ask, before we get on to any winners, I want to ask, did you have any favourites going in? Obviously, the big categories we saw today, because you and I sort of took the time out to watch the ceremony as it went out live. So most outstanding comedy, most outstanding limited series or movie, and most outstanding drama series. These are the big ones that our, Hollywood friends were vying for. You know, what were you excited about going in?
Have to admit, not a lot. I was very excited about Succession, which we will get to. Because it is an excellent show, and its second season was even better than its first. I was also very briefly, not to spoil things, but given that there was a bit of a Canadian wave happening, I was also very briefly excited at the prospect of Full Frontal with Samantha Bee winning, because I feel like that is a underrated show, and, you know, obviously it airs on SBS, so that's why we love it so much. And obviously, you know, John Oliver's great, but I feel like once you're up to like 6 and 7 years in a row, just like take a step back.
Yeah, there should be some automatic disqualification.
Yeah, it's like the Oprah thing where she stopped putting her name forward for daytime Emmys because she didn't need a 50th one.
Her mantelpiece, despite all the additions she'd made, she'd finally run out of room.
Yeah. But what were you excited about, Ben?
Well, I have to say, so looking at the comedy list, you know, I did watch Curb Your Enthusiasm. Does Curb Your Enthusiasm get better or worse over seasons? I feel like it really embraces the sameness.
Yeah, I'm just surprised it's still on air.
Well, just as long as Larry David's a grumpy bastard, HBO will keep throwing money at him to film himself being a grumpy bastard.
Yeah. And I don't know if it was on the podcast or in a real life conversation we had, but I know you were quite the fan of both Unbelievable and Unorthodox. Is that right?
Yes. Well, you're jumping now to Best Limited Series. And to me, this is sort of where the gold is in sort of what is maybe not the most exciting year. I'm just going to sort of throw that out there because Unbelievable, I absolutely adored. This is the series starring Toni Collette about the case of a rape and sort of all the criminal investigation that follows. Unorthodox, I think, was a bit uneven, but a very sort of sweet show about a young woman from a strict Jewish community in New York who flees to Germany, seeking her mother as well as a better life. And Mrs. America is completely one of my favorites of the year that played out on FX in the US with Cate Blanchett as Phyllis Schlafly, a firebrand conservative sort of political figure who was campaigning against the Equal Rights Amendment, and then the sort of feminist activists who all were campaigning against her. And Watchmen, to me, sort of lost its way a little bit, but I sort of thought it was doing some interesting things. Little Fires Everywhere, I have to admit, I've only watched the pilot of that, but I did just complete the book and quite enjoyed it. So a pretty rich category there. And, you know, there's, I think, a few worthwhile winners.
I do think that, you know, given, you know, we're at peak television now, I do feel like limited series continues to get more and more interesting because the people who are maybe previously not making television will commit to a limited series. And of course, just by the very nature of them being limited series, when you look at drama series and it's what, like 6 of 8 are just, you know, ongoing series that are in fourth and fifth years, it doesn't really make the most exciting category when you're talking about fifth season of one show and fourth season of another show and sixth season of another show. So yeah, it did seem like a lot of attention was in the limited series category, and, you know, probably rightfully so. It's definitely had some of the more interesting programs of the night.
I do, and I know this is sort of has been discussed by, you know, awards pundits before, but it can be confusing what counts as a limited series versus a drama when you have things like Hollywood on Netflix, for example, which I presume is intended as a returning drama with multiple seasons. What really puts that in the limited category? I don't always understand it. I know that there's opportunities for the producers of these shows to submit them in whichever category they choose, which seems a bit dodgy.
Well, slash the category they think they have the best chance of winning.
That sounds like a decent rationale for it.
Yeah. But also, you know, The Handmaid's Tale was very much meant to be a one-season show and then became too popular to stay a one-season show.
Yeah, well, The Handmaid's Tale, it does sit in the best drama category, and what separates it from a returnable show like Hollywood, I'm not quite sure. But of the best drama nominees, a lot of shows that are kind of reaching or sort of their kind of midpoint or end, Better Call Saul, The Crown, Killing Eve, Ozark, Succession, you've mentioned, The Handmaid's Tale, of course. The Mandalorian is one of the few new shows that got a nomination in Best Drama this year.
And even though it didn't get a lot of love in the awards that we just watched, it did seem to pick up a lot of the creative arts Emmys from what I can see. So it certainly got some love from the Academy, but didn't seem to make any noise in tonight's awards, unless I missed something.
No, I think there was a joke at one point that Jimmy Kimmel made about Zendaya being younger than Baby Yoda, and that was probably the only reference to The Mandalorian pretty much for the night.
Yeah, even though like 100 million more people will have watched The Mandalorian than ever watch Euphoria.
Yes, but at least they know Zendaya's name. So
yeah.
That's good. Let's jump now to who's actually winning the damn things. Let's just sort of come out and say this now. It was a big night for Canada.
Yeah, it was a huge, huge night for Canada. Obviously, Schitt's Creek winning the first 7 awards, which I believe is some sort of record. What I also found interesting, and which I didn't realize until I read about it, the reason that they did all drama at once and then all comedy at once was for completely technical reasons. They didn't want to have to keep trying to cross backwards and forwards between different places. So obviously on a normal night, we wouldn't have seen 7 comedy and awards in a row handed out, which did make the Schitt's Creek winning almost like embarrassing.
Look even bigger.
Yeah, look even bigger, but also like I think Dan Levy at some point said, you know, the internet's about to turn on me. Because obviously as soon as anything gets popular, we have to hate it. But you know, besides how excited they obviously were, you could also tell there was like a level of embarrassment of how much praise they were getting in the first, you know, 20 minutes of the show, winning 7 awards.
We can talk a bit more about the format of the show later, but I quite enjoyed the single-mindedness of, you know, all the comedy categories 1 in a row. And it did feel like the Schitt's Creek cast and crew were taking the piss a little bit because they had obviously hired some marquee. It was almost like a wedding setup with all of them there. And they, at first we saw them all appropriately distanced with masks on. But by the end, they were kind of licking their awards and handing them around. And, you know, there was very little concern for hygiene and personal safety in that room.
Yeah, well, I was very quick to note on Twitter that the Schitt's Creek account earlier this morning tweeted out to prepare us for what we were about to see, I guess. They tweeted out, "Tonight, some Schitt's Creek cast and nominated team members have been able to gather for an Emmys event in Toronto, adhering to Ontario's COVID-19 guidelines. All in attendance have been in isolation since returning negative COVID-19 results." So, you know, they were warning us that they were doing all the right things. And to be fair to them and Canada, they probably didn't even, you know, the masks were probably more for show than anything, given how many, you know.
Yeah, that, I think they were taking the piss.
Yeah, like the I feel like the Schitt's Creek Emmy party was probably one of the safest places on the planet you could be.
As long as they're forced to quarantine in that wedding marquee for the next 14 days, then I'll be happy. And there can be some repeat of that whole biosphere fiasco that was made into a documentary earlier this year.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my hope.
Well, look, they've got their 7 Emmys to keep them warm. But I do get the impression that perhaps, I don't know if I'm reading too much into it, but I feel like maybe Schitt's Creek told the Emmys that, oh, like maybe we'll have a party or something. And the Emmys were like, yes, like have a party and have cameras. And like, I feel like maybe there was a nod that, you know, they were going to be big winners because they seem to have the most elaborate sort of live crosses.
The Academy were like, said, yes, that's going to save us a lot of gas miles with our sponsored Kia delivery cars. So that helped out. Let's break it down a little bit. So we had Catherine O'Hara winning Outstanding Lead Actress in a Comedy Series. She said that she'll be forever grateful for the opportunity to play a woman of a certain age, her age, and may you have as much fun holed up in a small room with your family as she had with the Roses, which was sweet.
Yeah.
Eugene Levy, of course, won for Outstanding Lead Actor. He talked about playing a straight role for pretty much the first time in his career and that he had had so much success he had to seriously question what he'd been doing for the last 40 years and, you know, praised the opportunity to work with his children.
Yeah. But only mild nepotism, I'm sure.
And the two supporting actor awards, so Dan Levy won and Annie Murphy also won for Schitt's Creek and Outstanding Writing, Outstanding Direction, and of course Series.
Yeah, clean sweep.
Clean sweep, yes. Let's go on to Limited Series, which is where the show took us next. You know, this, as I was saying, was a category with some great shows in the mix. And the love did get spread out a little bit more here.
So of limited series, the non-Watchmen winners, maybe is the easiest way to look at this, was Mark Ruffalo, for I Know This Much Is True, where he played twins, I believe. Have you seen that one?
I haven't seen it. Okay. No, but now it's on my watch list.
Yeah.
He gave a very sort of impassioned political speech sitting on his couch next to his wife.
His very excited wife.
I think maybe we should hear a bit of that.
And so we have a big, important moment ahead of us. Are we going to be a country of division, hatred, and a country only for a certain kind of people? Or are we going to be one of love and strength and fighting for those, all of us, to all of us, have the American dream and the pursuit of life and liberty and love and happiness in this great country of ours? That's what we're facing right now. So get out and vote, make a plan, and vote for love and compassion and kindness. I love you all. Thank you so much, and God bless you.
I mean, I'm moved just hearing those words. It was, I think, sort of a night for political speeches. Obviously, we're going into an election year. It is an election year, so a lot of passion from some of our winners.
Yeah, two of probably, I guess, my favorite acceptance speeches, if that's what we want to call them, were in this category. The first one was the Cord Jefferson, who won for writing for Watchmen, along with Damon Lindelof. I thought he gave a very good speech, and I liked the fact that he kind of quite sincerely thanked his therapist and told everybody that in the last 2 years of seeing therapy, it's made a huge difference to his life and that it should be free for everyone. And I don't think I've kind of heard mental health called out in such a sort of frank way in an acceptance speech. Like, it almost got a chuckle at the start when he started it, but then people realized that he was, you know, very genuinely thanking his therapist for what he's done to him. So I thought that was quite nice and sweet and, you know, a change from just thanking your agent at WME or wherever.
Yeah, we get plenty of acceptance speeches like that.
Yeah.
Regina King won Best Actress for Watchmen again, and she did do a call out for people to vote, have a plan. It's very important to have a plan.
Yep.
Be a good human, she said. She was also one to give a shout out to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And she had a Breonna Taylor image on her T-shirt, similar to what Uzo Aduba had, who was the winning for Best Supporting Actress, who had a Breonna Taylor T-shirt as well, yes.
Yeah. I thought her speech was quite sweet with the calling out to her mother and then sort of running off screen to obviously go and see her family after her excitement was quite sweet.
Yeah. I enjoyed some of the sort of off-camera reactions. That's that's something you don't usually get. That was sweet.
No. Or, you know, not to skip ahead, but I think like the phone rang during the Succession Award acceptance. Someone had to go and take that off the hook, which I thought was funny. I think the thing with acceptance speeches is they can either be incredibly like clinical and prepared and just boring. They can be sort of an emotional mess, which can be nice because, you know, obviously it really means something to that person, especially, you know, with sort of emerging artists and new performers who genuinely, you know, seem surprised to win it. And I do think that a good mix of the sort of prepared and genuinely surprised was the supporting actor for Watchmen, Yahya Abdul-Mateen II. I thought he was genuinely overwhelmed and did spend like a big chunk of time thanking his family and his community and the black women in his life and, you know, was genuinely sort of overcome by winning the award. But then also I thought gave sort of the best description or sort of pitch of what Watchmen was about, and especially what it was about to him. So he was clearly prepared, but then also clearly overwhelmed by the moment. And I thought that was probably one of the nicest sort of moments to see.
Yeah. I think he really sort of held that moment. It was good. Shall we get on to the Governor's Award, basically the Lifetime Achievement Award? Oprah Winfrey introduced this. This went out to Tyler Perry. Are you a big Tyler Perry fan, John?
I have to say I'm not. And it's not a surprise because traditionally we don't see a lot of his stuff in Australia, which I think is a shame, really. Traditionally, Australian networks and services have, look, I don't know how to say it any other way, are pretty averse to, black-led dramas and comedies. So Tyler Perry, who's incredibly prolific, has made more series during lockdown than Australia will probably make out of lockdown next year. And the majority of the content we just don't see here. So it's not an excuse, but I would say that, unfortunately, even his most successful things hardly register here in Australia. And hopefully that's something that'll change.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was great to get a reminder of his story. And of course, the kind of pathos was wrung out through his period being homeless. But then he's gone on to build this enormous studio complex in Atlanta. And narrating this was Oprah Winfrey and Chris Rock. And they were sort of both really emphasizing how he's worked outside the Hollywood system for his career. And well, in the US, you know, they produce much more content than we do here, but there still are only a certain number of gatekeepers. You know, sort of traditionally it has been those big studios that people have gone to try and get a show made. And if the big studio knocks you back, that's the only opportunities you have. And in Australia, we have largely the funding agencies, and they're the ones that control the purse strings. And so I think whenever anyone is able to not only go it alone outside of that system, but make a success of it, I think, you know, that really should be celebrated. And you know, he has created so many job opportunities for people of color in the industry. And you know, he obviously understands his audience very well. I mean, I remember when he was making those Madea movies, and I think, you know, he also, as well as making them for black audiences, they're quite strongly faith-based as well, which isn't, you know, not a world that I'm usually that invested in. So, you know, but I think that someone who really understands their audience and is making content for that audience outside of the mainstream system, unless they're right-wing nut jobs, and then they don't count. But otherwise we should be celebrating them, right?
Yeah. And, you know, the fact that he's, you know, he's basically created his own Hollywood in Atlanta. As you said, he's doing it on his own, but he's also, you know, he signs these massive deals with broadcasters to produce hundreds of hours of content a year, which he seemingly also all writes himself without any help, which seems terrifying. But yeah, no, it's really impressive. And, you know, it's a model that more people should aim to do, because the more control you can have over what you make, the better stories you can probably tell. So yeah, I think the average television watcher in Australia might know Shonda Rhimes or Ryan Murphy or one of those big showrunners. But, you know, I'm struggling to think of a single Tyler Perry show, let alone one that's aired in Australia. So, yeah, maybe we should take a look at that, Ben.
Yes. I did see him playing Colin Powell in Vice the other day.
Yes.
Which was not a show that he was behind. But
no.
Just to say, you know.
But clearly a worthy winner for such a lifetime achievement award for what he's done.
For sure. And this brings us up to the drama category. And you've been name dropping it through the podcast constantly. The big winner in this category was Succession. I don't know about you, John, but I feel like we can't speak about Succession without hearing a little bit of that title sequence music.
Or just the whole thing beginning to end.
I am going to sort of throw to another acceptance speech, because Jesse Armstrong, the writer and creator of the show, did do an amusing bit in his acceptance speech for the final award of the night, where instead of giving out thank yous, he decided to give out unthank yous.
Unthank you to the virus for keeping us all apart this year. Unthank you to President Trump for his crummy and uncoordinated response. Unthank you to Boris Johnson and his government for doing the same in my country. Unthank you to all the nationalist and sort of quasi-nationalist governments in the world who are exactly the opposite of what we need right now. And unthank you to the media moguls who do so much to keep them in power. So unthank you.
Looking at like the world clock while I was watching that, obviously, you know, for Sarah Snook, yes. Who I assume was in Sydney from what I've seen her in other recent interviews, you know, it was a great, you know, just afternoon watching TV. But by the time Succession won Best Drama, it was 4 a.m. in the UK. So they were either having very late nights or very early mornings. But yeah, once again, time zones work out sort of okay for Australia, but not the rest of the world.
I wanted to figure out where Rami Yusuf was, because, you know, this was held sort of Sunday evening US time. And then, you know, we had some Londoners. We sort of had a few Australians, Hugh Jackman. I'm not quite sure where his Zoom link was coming from, but he was up for an acting award. But Rami Yusuf was sitting there sort of in glowing sunlight, which made me think, like, he's certainly US-based, but he couldn't have been in the US.
I do think, because the show is made for the East Coast, I think it's still, like, afternoon in LA, isn't it, when it's made?
You're ruining the illusion for me, John.
Sorry. Sure, he was somewhere very exciting.
You're telling me that the whole time, that every time they do these award shows, it's actually glaring sunlight outside.
Yeah, sorry.
All right, fine.
Just like it's here.
It was the California sunshine then. It was the glow of the wildfires. Our thoughts and prayers go out to those fighting the wildfires. Outside of Succession, which won for best writing, best directing, best drama, and it won the best lead actor for Jeremy Strong. And he was another sort of genuinely surprised winner, I think. He didn't look like he was expecting it.
No, and his first nomination, and, you know, I'd never heard of him before Succession, so he's certainly having a very good run.
I feel like he thought that if Succession was going to win for acting, it was going to go to Brian Cox.
Yeah. I did quite like, not to get all sappy, but I did quite like he quoted a poem, or he quoted something, basically just saying, you know, he's waited his whole life to find a book that he's going to spend the rest of his life finishing, and that he thought Succession would be that book. And I kind of thought that was quite poetic.
Mm. It was good. Zendaya, I think, she won for Outstanding Lead Actress for Euphoria. I think that, you know, let's forgive her for her youth. I think she did just give one of these rattling off her agents and her management. I think she even referred to the people around her as her team. All I'm going to say is she not a bit too young just to have no surname?
Yeah, I feel like I've known about Zendaya for like ever, but she's 24 and this, I don't know what else she's done, but I feel like she's been in the culture forever. But, you know, good on her. Euphoria is a great show. She's clearly incredibly successful. And yeah, and, you know, it's a historic win in that she's the second black actress to ever win lead actress in a drama series.
Yeah, good to see. And she also sort of managed a presenting appearance as well.
Before running back to her home.
I feel like there was sort of some green room acceptances going on, or sort of at least sort of nominees sitting back there amongst the other presenting appearances. But we mentioned sort of surprise winner Jeremy Strong. I feel like the supporting actor categories in drama, Billy Crudup for The Morning Show and Julia Garner for Ozark, like those two just spent the entire of their acceptance being shocked.
Yeah, well, Julia won last year and I think was considered sort of an upset, surprising winner. So I think to then win second year, especially with the caliber of actresses in her category, I think she was, you know, doubly shocked to win again. And yeah, I was also pretty surprised to see Billy Crudup win. I quite enjoyed The Morning Show, but I wouldn't have picked him as being its sort of sole, its sole award winner for the night. But, you know, good to mix things up, I guess. I had my money on Nicholas Braun from Succession, because he's just such a awkward character. But yeah, you know, it's good to not give it to who you think is going to win, I guess.
Yeah, that might have been the sole Apple TV Plus win for the night. Billy Crudup, I think he does play a very good smarmy TV executive in the morning show, or Morning Wars as it's called in Australia. And, you know, we know a lot about smarmy TV executives, don't we, John?
Yeah, I'm on a Zoom call with one right now.
It was, you know, I mean, he called me a few times for sort of research purposes. I gave him what I could.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, those are the awards that we saw tonight. There were awards that were given out ahead of this, and there is also a whole extra level of Creative Arts Emmys as well. There's also a whole daytime award ceremony too. Are there any of the other winners that we haven't touched on, John, that you would like to give a shout out to?
I guess purely selfishly, because it does air on SBS Viceland. I was glad to see the final season of Leah Remini's Scientology series win for best hosted documentary series, I believe was the category. So that was nice. And, you know, my personal favorite Emmy category every year is obviously main title design. So it was...
you lost me there.
Yeah. Didn't write that blog for a decade for no reason, Ben. yeah, Godfather of Harlem picked that up, which, you know, was a it's a good opening. So check that one out.
Yes. Well, do they even have that category for Australian TV shows? Best title design?
No.
I think the answer is no, and I think it shows.
The other interesting thing about that category is it's dominated by sort of a single Australian man who's won seemingly dozens of them in the last couple of years, Patrick Clare. So we do punch above our weight in that very specific category, because I guess he couldn't get any work in Australia, so he moved to the US and started making great title design over there.
Well, as I understand it, he did do some motion graphics work for The Feed ahead of heading over to the States.
Yes, he got his start at Hungry Beast, and then, like everyone at Hungry Beast, they went and worked at The Feed.
So, you know, we sort of claim him as our own, really.
Yeah, SBS's own, yeah.
Another category that we don't need to delve into in detail, but there are sort of variety show categories, most outstanding, that these award shows themselves can be nominated for. So you can have... an Emmy Award going to the Emmy Awards, of all things.
Yes.
Would tonight's show have won any awards in your eyes? Let's finish up by taking a look at what 2020 has brought.
I don't think this will win an Emmy Award for Best Variety. It might win some sort of technical award for most Zooms or something, because it does seem like it was genuinely quite a big technical undertaking, right down to like the silly boxes that opened up with awards for people and stuff. But otherwise, you know, I think the TV industry, you know, and rightfully so, we've been all dealing with this for only a few months. Everyone's figuring out what like these big events look like when you can't have an audience and you can't get 1,000 people in an auditorium and you can't have people hugging and shaking hands. And I do think creatively, there are some upsides to this, like, you know, the fact that, you know, the US debates, the presidential debates that are going to come up, you know, they're not going to have audiences, which they should have never had. Like, there's things that you just know you don't need an audience for. So, you know, I think, yeah, yeah. So there's things like that that I think we'll actually see sort of creative improvements. I thought like the fake laughter at the start was not great. Like, I think a lot of people have sort of done that gag where they've inserted, you know, footage of audiences from past events.
I have to admit it fooled me. So Jimmy Kimmel was the host tonight, and he sort of came out onto the stage for his opening monologue and, you know, did some bits about, you know, television being the thing that's going to get us through when the world sucks. The crowd were just lapping it up of all the celebs, and the kind of rug pull where suddenly he reveals that he's just delivering it to an empty theater. I was kind of like, oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Took me a while. I might just be slow.
I just feel like they could have done that in like with 2 minutes of that joke, not like 8 minutes or whatever it was, because the reveal of the empty audience was actually sort of a nice moment. But yeah, I feel like the jokes like universally fell flat. Like, I don't remember a specifically funny thing in the whole night.
It made me realize, you know, it's sort of usually not canned laughter. It's usually just sort of the captive audience of the celebrities sort of mostly probably laughing out of politeness. But that does usually add something, you know, when they just kind of have these late show style kind of throwaway gags and it gets delivered to crickets or even less than crickets because they're just in an empty studio. I sort of did miss at least the warmth of just a sort of polite guffawing. Yeah, I mean, I think sort of Jimmy Kimmel did fine. I think sort of oddly, he pretty much shared hosting duties with D-Nice, the DJ, who seemed to be doing most of the outros and intros. It almost had like equal or more time on screen than Jimmy Kimmel. Then I feel like what really fell flat were the sort of little guest appearances, starting with Jennifer Aniston, of different actors coming in and doing bits with Jimmy in the studio in that odd hallway of TVs as well.
Yeah, like you needed something to keep it together, but I don't know. I did like the fact that there genuinely seemed to be a fire that they did not expect to keep burning as long as it did. So that was a nice like moment of tension very early on when I think someone yelled out like, put out the fire. But I don't know what you thought about this, but I quite liked the essential workers presenting awards. I thought it was nice to just have like regular people out in the, and the other thing that, you know, when you can't have a studio full of people, I think it's really nice to just go out into the real world. So I thought it was really nice to not only highlight those people and what they're doing and to let them hand out these massive awards, but it was also nice just to, you know, be out in the sunshine in the real world and connect with people who are doing much more important things than most of the people who were winning awards that night. And for, you know, for every political speech that someone gives on one of these awards shows where they, you know, talk about using their platform or whatever, which is fine and important, like, actually what they should be doing is like just handing over a slither of the time to the people that they're talking about. So I thought it was much more powerful to see a doctor or a truck driver or a postman talk about their life experience for 30 seconds than to hear an actor telling you to go vote, which is also important. Please go and vote.
Yeah, no, I thought that worked really well. And there could have been a much more ham-fisted way to do a tribute to the essential workers and the frontline workers. But I felt like this sort of validated these people, and you know, they actually got to present significant awards. I mean, it was a fairly technical feat. I think there was something like 144 little remote cameras that they sent out that people could set up in their own homes. Some people were just linked in directly via Zoom with the telltale little kind of name in the corner that you and I are so familiar with from our daily meetings. I mean, one advantage, of course, of using this remote award ceremony is that you save all that time with people sort of having to kind of find their way up to the stage. So in a way, like the award ceremony was just a bit over 3 hours, so still long, but they managed to kind of push through a lot more than they would have otherwise.
Yeah, and besides the what I'm sure were commercial obligations to have skits about Kias and stuff, like it did give them that what felt like more time to have those moments with like Issa Rae and America Ferrera, where they were sort of telling their own, you know, how they got into the industry stories, which are quite nice bumpers in and out, which when you would previously be wasting time with applause and getting to the stage and stuff, they're probably the kind of things that would get cut. So yeah, I thought for its many faults, there were some nice improvements, and hopefully, you know, in a year where things are relatively back to normal, maybe they won't forget all of those things, because I still think it would be nice to give some time over to some people that weren't celebrities to hand out awards and to highlight their lives, given that that's what they claim some of these awards are meant to be about. And yeah, if we could just generally get rid of audiences and clapping, I'd also be pretty happy.
So that's the takeaway lesson, is awards shows just need fewer audiences.
Yeah.
Well, that's another big year of the Emmys. Exciting to watch along with you, John, remotely and chat about it. Thanks very much for coming onto the show.
Yeah, it was great to sort of be with you again.
Yeah, just like us and all of the world of Hollywood.
Live into my childhood bedroom.
Just coming to you from our living rooms or your bedroom,
yep.
Your parents' bedroom even.
Yeah.
So that's it for the show. And make sure you subscribe to SBS The Playlist wherever you get your podcasts and give us a lot of stars and leave us a nice review because it helps people to find the show. And you can let us know what you thought of the movies and TV shows we discussed on Facebook or Twitter at SBS Movies. And I'm on Twitter at Ben Nguyen TV. Where can we find you on Twitter, John?
I'm on Twitter at iDance.
And you can even dig up your old blog if you're keen to discover the thoughts on title sequences.
Yeah, from the mid-2000s.
And The Playlist is produced by Jeremy Wilmot. Until next time, see you, John.
See you, Ben.